Harrison, National Council of Jewish Women's Oral History. This is tape 5, side 2 of Professor Shapiro, Moshe Shapiro. And would you like to continue for talking about Florence Reisenstein? There's a little bit that we did not get on the second side. You were starting to talk about what.
No, I spoke about her remarkable, being a remarkable individual in her, both her personality and her friendliness in general, but her effective friendliness in the sense that she was capable of accomplishing things that others could not accomplish, even though they may have had the same kind of mental capacity. But she had the combination of intellect and friendliness and personality and drive that just melded into something that is evident by the Board of Education naming a school for her. Reisenstein Middle School. And so I'm just using her as an example of the people in the community that we enjoyed so much getting to know, and I suppose in terms of community life allowed us to made us a part of it. Going back for a second to our Ingomar days, you know, in terms of community work, I think I said in the first of that I was really the instigator of what turns out to be the McCandless Township Sanitary Authority.
Right.
Well, that's a kind of activity that I was able to take out there, to undertake out there, and that was primarily, I suppose, based upon my viewing environmental conditions there and seeing the problems, and then getting at that time the State Health Department to conduct a survey, and then the community to realize their needs, and bringing the then Dr. Kurtzman, who later became the Chancellor of the University of Pittsburgh, who was working at that time for the Pennsylvania Economy League, to come and provide advice as to what's to be done. And those kinds of things are also where part of the people with whom you associated.
What other information would you like to cover or add? We have here honoraries, honors, awards, publications. We've gone over the awards and things, but I don't think I've ever asked you about publications.
Well, obviously, being an academe, you have to publish,
right.
But I also wanted to publish, and so that I can't remember now what the number of papers I have, and you know, in academe these days you have to divide them between those which are peer-reviewed and those which are not peer-reviewed and those which are by invitation and those which you submit, but over the years I've had my share of publications. I've not published a separate book of my own, but I've contributed chapters in books, you know, professional books.
Could you name?
Well, one is Patty is the original editor or author of a book called Industrial Hygiene and Toxicology, and mine is on the environmental health aspects of industrial activities as opposed to the industrial hygiene aspects of them. And there's a new edition is due to come out in which Dr. Dimon also has a chapter. And I suppose the things that I'm also apart from papers, the reports that have become even better known than papers or in a chapter, I suppose the one that stands out is the report of my Western Port Bay environmental study work in Australia. So it's better known in Australia than it is in the United States. But as things happen that way, it's happenstance because you were the foundation director, and the report is your report. It becomes the Shapiro report. So that's the way it's considered in Australia. The reason I'd be a much more important reason for being pleased about it is that it was a pioneering work, and that in terms of influence on the field, it probably has as much as anything else that I've done. Maybe yes, maybe no, in terms of publications.
Professor, I've asked you so many questions. Are there any questions that I have not asked you? Is there anything you would like to tell us about that we have not covered?
Well, you know, my background and, in a sense, the way things have evolved, let me put it this way. I presume that if World War II had not broken out, that the chances are pretty good, namely more than 50%, that I would have returned to then Palestine after finishing my education. And that in a sense that's been a continuing kind of question all the time. Well, we did go back for 1 year, and it really was a simple matter in terms of, because like being offered the position in New York, I was under consideration and probably would have been offered a position if I'd indicated the possibility of doing it in the Ministry of Health of the fledgling country. So that was in 1948, 49, in 1950 by that time it was, when the Ministry of Health was being established. But again, just like the Arizona academic position, the matter of just putting bread on the table was kind of a problem.
Would you like to have gone back to live there if you would have had your total choice and all the bread and butter?
Yes, it's more than like. There was a drang, a pull, that comes from the background. Thinking about today, I probably would be very disturbed, as I am now, you know, by the sense of what is going on. First of all, I must say this, because it's being truthful. I am really against the theocratic notion of the countryman. The notion that a minority can impose their will in that term over the whole nation and bring it to a point of which we, both as a people and as people, as a the Jewish people, and as people just as individuals, abhor in other places, makes me wonder as to what has happened to the ideals of the country beforehand. The second situation, allows this kind of thing to happen, but which was developed because of a sense of justice, namely proportional representation in an election, meaning that really those tiny little groups that have different ideas politically than other groups still have a say in the community and in a country, has brought it to a point where it appears to me, at least, that the true values of the country are being subverted. Well, the question how long that will last, it's been under discussion and under review, and attempts to change it have been made, but the obvious capability of those who have this capacity to undo balances is tremendous. So if you put me in a position of trying to say now, if we had gone back in 1950 or 51 and we were still there now, what would my feelings be? Well, it's obvious, number one, that I would not be in the Likud. That's number one. How active I would be is another question, because I suppose it's fair to say that I'm not a political animal in the sense of activity, other than opinions and the way you behave or the way you vote. I was just thinking about it yesterday, just not in relation to this oral history, but really how different Israel is now than it was 40 years ago. And one of the things that is fascinating to me and remarkable has been, despite all of the problems that they face, how the kibbutzim, as an ideal and as a manifestation of an ideal, have been able to survive through all these difficulties, and thinking of the other changes that in terms of this kind of human ideal, they may be the last remaining ones on the face of the earth.
It was a human ideal, but isn't it also very practical?
Well, it had to be practical, but you have to remember that, and still even, I don't know even now, but the support they had, extraneous support, the land was Jewish National Fund land. They received loans and things like that, mm-hmm. to overcome difficulties. But forgetting about that, all that, because, you know, we subsidize industries here in the United States. I mean, there's no such, in a sense, tax forgiveness and all that. I don't think in that sense that kibbutzim received greater support or assistance from the people, from the country, than do industries. But the fact that they can do it still on that collective basis, that's and still being able to do it today under the of what's happening in this world now, I suppose what's to see their staying power is to see what happens in the next 5 years.
Well, I wanted to ask you, since there have been rumbles and talks about possibly a peace discussion now involving Syria, what is your opinion about
that?
I mean, this
You're
just
changing the subject.
All right, I don't
know. No, that's
to,
all right. That's,
no, I'm
that,
just...
No, that's okay. That's okay. But it's a different subject than I was addressing myself to.
But then stay with that, and I apologize.
No, there's no need to apologize, but it's... I've reached a point in life where I wouldn't be surprised either way.
Okay.
Where all of a sudden this guy Assad sees his bread buttered on another side and is willing to look at things. Now the things that scares me is that we are willing to overlook people's horrendously terrible activities because all of a sudden the individual of the country sees things more our way. That's, and by our, I mean the United States or the West. At the same time, I wouldn't be surprised one bit if it's not all a charade or a horrible are being pulled into a morass, that kind of thing. So I really don't know. But nothing about what happens in the Middle East should surprise anybody. What should be a surprise, if anything, would be if all of a sudden, number one, democracy breaks out. Number two, justice prevails. Number three, religious hatred is all of a sudden gives way to understanding. Those are the kinds of things that really would be surprising.
You said nothing would surprise you?
No. Nothing, but if
exactly.
Something would, that would be it.
Professor, do you have any unfinished business?
Yes, this, I suppose, I've had a notion, I suppose I'm saying it publicly now, and I don't know if it'll come to fruition, but I've had the unfinished, my part is to, it wouldn't be writing a book because it'd be too big, but it'd be editing a book, which is needed. And if I don't do it, somebody else will. It's either a handbook or an encyclopedia of environmental health. The field has changed and expanded at the same time so much that there is a need for a new look at it and an available one to individuals, because otherwise the material that would be in any encyclopedia or any handbook is obviously already available, in the sense that it had to be developed, the research had to be done, or the application had to be analyzed and assessed as to which is more effective and which is not, where the dangers lie, and what solutions can be brought to alleviate the dangers or mitigate the dangers. But they're so disparate, they're so scattered in the literature that most people are not capable of gathering onto themselves, and therefore this kind of a book, well, number one, you have to have support to begin with for it, because you can't go to a publisher and say that they'll accept something like that, but they won't. It's not like Trump getting $1 million for that.
In advance, you mean?
Yeah, advance. So you don't get it in this field. It just boggles the imagination to think of that. But anyway, that's the way it goes in this world. And so you have to write a proposal to get support for it. Now, whether at my age and my current status of health I want to undertake it or not, I don't know. So that's one of the major unfinishedness. I see it personally. A more general thing, on a personal thing, I can't work to it too much because I don't have the wherewithal, but I'd like to see my son's memorial fund really established as a, you know, as an ongoing thing. That I know that when I go, it's ongoing, but that's a personal, completely personal thing. And the only other one really is to see that both the kids and the grandchildren grow up to make their way in life with a sense of both personal and community spirit of being able to to contribute. And so, but that's their doing. It's not mine. It's just my watching it.
But they have quite a legacy.
Well, it's not. No.
As an interviewer, I'm taking that prerogative to say that. I want to thank you.
You are entirely welcome.
It's been a true pleasure to have gotten to know you and heard a lot about you. And I want to thank you and Anne, and hope that your encyclopedia will become a reality. And
I doubt it. I doubt it. But anyway, it's fun thinking about it.
Okay, we're going to discuss your son's memorial fund.
Well, our youngest son, David, as I think I already indicated before, died in June of 1985 in a flying accident. He was flying his glider in a competition at Sugarloaf in Vermont. And we don't really know exactly what happened, but what the result was that he lost altitude completely and crashed into a field short of the airport at Sugarloaf and was killed. At the time of his death, he was a student at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Department of Aeronautics and Astronautics. And his being there is a story in itself, because David had already graduated and received his bachelor's degree from St. John's College, the Annapolis and Santa Fe College, and MIT has a regulation which prohibits anyone from receiving a second bachelor's degree.
I think this we have on record.
But he worked his way in there and received his and was admitted as a student. Well, the thing that we thought that would be most appropriate is to establish a memorial fund for David at MIT to memorialize him and to assist his fellow and following students or co-students. And we established it, but the funds required for it are for making it a permanent fund or beyond any means that we have to do anything like that, and beyond the means of friends who have David's and ours who contributed to the fund. But that's the kind of thing that I would like to be able to do, is to establish it on a permanent basis so it becomes one that has its name attached to it.